Well, today we on Saturday, and I want to get here, but we're actually into action. We finished the four-step instructions on how it works, and we probably spent 3 months on it. We went through it in great detail, the resentments, fears, and the sexual inventory and harms to others. Tomorrow night, for those who have time, two things. One, please don't give me the score of the game. I'm going to TiVo it. Two, we're going to read probably the best page in the big book, 164, which is the final page in A Vision for You, and it's really powerful. So, and then we'll be finished the book instructions for our ghosts for the 10th time on Sunday night. And then we're going to do Dr. Bob's Nightmare the following week, and then start over. On Wednesday night, we're on We Agnostics, and we covered page 44 and 45, and that chapter's just great. So if you could join us at 7:30, great, tomorrow at 6. Today, we're on Into Action, which is page 72. And notice it says into action. So what have we done up to this point? People think we've done a lot of action. Well, in step one, we became willing based upon our understanding of our powerlessness that we're willing to change. Anybody want to do that? Anybody want to do it today? Step two, which is covered, and they spend a lot of time on step one, to understand our powerlessness and admit complete defeat on our own. Step two is willingness to believe, and that's covered in the agnostics. Are we willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can help me? And actually, in the book, it says, are you just willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself? That's the question. And it says, if you answer yes, then you're on your way. Then we read How It Works. We read the preamble tonight, which describes how we find a power to live, which on page 45, which we covered last week on Wednesday, it says that's our problem, lack of power. We have to find a power to live. And the power solves my problem. And then we read the preamble tonight. Jen read it, and that's how we find the power. Where we find the power tells us in We Agnostics, and we're going to be covering that. How do I find this power? How do I live with God and trust God? And I've been studying the scriptures, and I was listening to someone teach on, and he talks about in Philippians, we're to live in joy with God based upon our trust with God, no matter what our situation. And so how do we learn to have a relationship with God, trust God, and rely on Him? And so we read those three pages, and then How It Works has three parts to it. It has the first part, we have to be convinced that my life run on self-will can't work. Anybody believe that? Can't work today, never works, will never work. Two, we have to stop playing God. We need a new director, can't be me. Why? Anybody know? It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? No power. We're not God. What a shock. And then, that was a shock. And then, so then we say the step three prayer. And then step four is where we face and be rid of the things that are blocking us from who? God. And we look at the manifestations of a life run on self-will. That's what we look at in step four. The instructions are very clear. We do a written inventory of three things: resentment, fear, and our sex conduct and relationships. Resentment to see how our anger is wrong. Fear to see how fear is wrong belief. It's not true. And we're relying on self and sex relationships and other relationships to see how we harm people with our self-centeredness. That's it. Three things. And then last week we read the promises of the results of step four. So now we're going to take this information in those, what we've covered, and we're going to put it into action. So into action means we're actually going to do something with what we've covered. And we're going to do that so that we can have a relationship with our Creator. We're going to unblock ourselves. So it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? So our personal inventory is what I just talked about in step four. We don't inventory our height and weight, and we don't inventory how much money we have or what kind of job. We inventory our thinking, and our thinking as a result of self-centeredness, and then our behavior as a result of our self-centeredness. The other thing we learn in how it works in step four is the freedom, how to be free of anger. Anybody think that's good? Well, 66-67 says, how can we master anger? And it gives us instructions. Anybody want to be freer? Page 68 has the prayer for freedom of fear. Anybody want to stop harming people? On page, I think, 72, it tells us how we write an ideal for our relationships so we stop harming people. So having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude. What do you think they mean by that? What kind of new attitude towards what?
Everybody.
Life, people, to what's important, what our goals are, our attitude towards our fellows, right? And towards those that we may have hated, we have a new attitude, right? We've forgiven them and ourselves. A new relationship with our Creator. Now, what was the old relationship? He was a co-pilot or a designated driver. God, right? When we needed him, he'll drive us. But now we want him to be in charge. Anybody think that's a good idea? So it's a complete turnaround, right? My life should be of service to God and others, not me and what I want. Now, anybody do that perfectly today? No. But that's what we seek. How do we do that each day? Well, that's what step 10 and 11 are about. And how, what do we do when we wake up, and how do we seek God? How do we handle the day? And right now we're still doing step five, but we want a new relationship with our Creator, and we want a relationship with our Creator that we can rely upon, right? That we can go to help us when we're away from Him, so we don't use drugs and alcohol. Anybody think that's a good idea? So the new relationship is God is our go-to guy instead of alcohol. I think God is a better go-to than alcohol, don't you think? And why is that? Because God has all power, and we want to find Him now. Now, alcohol had all power over us, right? But now we have a new power that's greater than alcohol. And to discover the obstacles in my path for my new relationship with my Creator. Now, I don't remove the obstacles. It's going to tell us that they're cast out. They're just cast out. And we have admitted certain defects. And the defects, and he uses defects in here twice. Defects are the manifestations of self, and I believe they're resentment, fear, and our shame and guilt from our harmful conduct. And we've looked at that, we've written them down. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. Anybody know what your trouble was or is? It's the same trouble today. It's me running the show. Me being centered on Michael, me separated from God, and then from that comes everything. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. We're going to cast out all these things. That's a powerful way of saying it. And one of the thoughts I wrote down, I'm letting go right now in the present moment. And I seek God where He is in the present moment. So it says, if I want these things to be cast out, this requires action on my part, which when completed will mean that I have admitted to God, to myself, and another human being the exact nature of our defects. Now in the steps on the wall, he says wrongs. And so defects, the exact nature of my wrongs. So that's all we admit. And the exact nature of my wrongs are my character defects that caused all my actions. Remember, our thinking causes our action. And if I'm impatient, intolerant, judgmental, angry, fearful, lustful, envious, self-centered, guess what happens? I act on that, and it's not pretty. And that's all as the result of being centered on who? Ourselves. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the previous chapter. So there is a program of recovery. It's different than the fellowship, right? It's a program of recovery, and it's the 12 steps, right? Anybody agree with that?
Yeah.
Good. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. I don't know, after you're around a while, it's fun to discuss our defects. Well, I was selfish today. Well, I was fearful, and you know, this and that. And Sandy Beach, I love that story where there's two tables in the country club, and one is the successful businessmen. They're all sitting around talking about their golf scores, how much money they made. They're buying a new Ferrari. They're getting a new house, blah, blah, blah. And the alcoholics at the other table, they said, well, I got disturbed at 10 o'clock, but then I let go, and I was fearful at 12. And, yeah, I only got disturbed three times today, and blah, blah, blah. That made a lot of sense to me. That's what we do. We share with each other. It says, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough at admitting these things to ourselves. That's difficult. There's doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find the solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Why do you think that's true? Well, when you write down your resentments and you do your columns, you have no idea. You're writing things as you see them. And then when you share them with someone else, you can see them differently. That's the whole point of it. I was listening today, and they're talking about what is a spiritual mind. A spiritual mind sees things as God would see them, not as we would see them. It's a change in perception. Now, that was in Scripture, and I think that's what the whole AA program's about. How we change our thinking, and we see things differently. Solitary self-appraisal is just your alcoholic mind reinforcing what you thought. And that won't change you. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Vital means necessary for life. Time after time, newcomers, you can't do the fifth step till you've done the fourth step. That's just I hope people understand that. I was trying to be funny, but it's true, right? A lot of people don't realize. And a lot of times, you could do four and five together. While people are writing out their fourth step, you're actually going over it with them. There are a lot of ways to do it. Time and time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts about their lives. Now, he's going to say, trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Now, what's the facts, certain facts about their lives? I'm not sure he's talking about all of our actions, although that's true. But I think he's talking about our facts are the distortion of the truth that we hold on to. Some people won't let go of certain resentments or certain fears or certain things that have happened to them. And they just don't want to let go of it or see the truth of it or how they can change the way they see it. Remember, we drink over resentments, right? And we drink over our fears and our harms. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk, so there's the warning. That's half measures, a half measure fourth step. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. And I wrote that they're hanging on to fear, resentments, and shame and guilt. A lot of times they haven't forgiven themselves because they haven't done a thorough fourth and fifth step. That's where I believe you forgive yourself. You can see the truth about why you did the things you do, and understand that that wasn't the person God created, that was the person I created by managing my life. I also write that when we're in self, we have wrongs, and there's resentment, fear, and wrong actions, and the defects that we talk about are being self-centered, fear, dishonest, prideful, inconsiderate, and self-seeking. And so the defects arise from being centered in self-centered soil. I like the analogy, I don't know if you do, but when I come in here, I had a tree, and it was called Michael's tree, and it was planted in Michael's soil, and the bark was full of my character defects, and the tree had this really rotten fruit, and three different fruits. One was resentment, one was fear, and one was shame and guilt. And what in AA I want to do is plant my tree in God's soil, and then I'll have the character God created, and then the tree will be beautiful. And so if you look at the fruit of your life each day, you can tell where your tree's been planted. But in the beginning, we're looking at the fruit of our life when we were planted in our soil. It said they never completed their house cleaning. Well, that sounds like our house, but that was a joke, by the way. My wife won't listen. Completed their house cleaning, and we want to clean the house completely. Why? Because if you have any area that you're holding on to, that could be the thing that gets you drunk. Anybody hold on to a resentment and then drink over it? Or you'll hold on to these things and you won't be content. You won't have a relationship with God. You'll be disturbed. Now, you may not drink over it, but you're not going to be able to enjoy the benefits of emotional sobriety. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. Notice thoughts in italics. And they only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So that's a powerful paragraph. So we want to lose my ego. How do I lose my ego? That's hard to do. But we want to lose my self-centeredness, and my fear is my self-reliance. And I think what they're talking about is when we become truly humble and we admit that we need God all the time, and we understand on our own we don't have any power. I think that's what they're talking about. They want us to be humble, fearless, and honest. And we have to have a certain amount of that until we tell someone else all their life story. Now, Joe and Charlie talk about, Charlie wrote a 300-page life story that he made some poor guy read, he said. And it had nothing to do with his alcoholism. You know, where I went to high school and what kind of grades I had in college is not important.
I have a question.
We'll get to that in a second. The life story is my story as I saw it. Now, I don't know about you. We could talk about it when we open up. My story has changed. My childhood has gotten better. My parents have become different. My ex-wife has changed. The way I see things changed now because of working the steps. But when you come in, you have a certain story. And the problem is that we believe it. Anybody have a list of people that got them here? Nobody else? A long list? Anybody you wanted executed? Well, you don't have to admit that. But you know, our story really relates to our thinking as alcoholics and the resentment and fear and the harms we've done. Joe and Charlie make the point that we don't care if you committed adultery 100 times. You're tired, they said. But why did you do this? Why did you do it? Why did you rob a bank 100 times? And they're, what they're talking about is, what is it, my personality caused me to do these things that were harmful to others and myself? So our story is just a story. It's not true. It was a great gift for me to see how things I see were not true. But here's the problem. As you get older and you get more recovery, you see the truth about your behavior when you look back at your past. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. Anybody do that? He is very much the actor To the outer world, he presents a stage character, and I think we do this in AA. We want to tell everybody how good we are and this and that. And to the one, this is the one he likes his fellows to see. I see that a lot when people are getting their 30-day coin and they have to tell you how long they were sober the last time. You know, for some reason, they think that's important. But it's not important, because what's important is you do something different than what you did before. You don't want to do the same thing you did if you were sober 9 months, because you drank again. And so, but they want us to feel like they were okay. They did it for a while, and I understand that. It's important. But we want to enjoy a certain reputation. So we all want to look good. This fear of disapproval occur in anybody in this room besides me? Fear of not being good enough, not measuring up, fear of criticism. I think a lot of people have that. I have that. Wanting to please people. Any people pleasers in here? It's really hard to live your whole life trying to please people, then worrying about what they think about you, then being afraid you're not good enough, then being angry when they criticize you. It's exhausting. And it says we can't be dependent on people anymore. We have to be dependent on God. But he knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. Now, he's talking here about when we're sober, and then he says the inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. So it's not the things on his sprees that we're totally concerned about. It's sober. But during our sprees, we have certain episodes we vaguely remember. These memories are a nightmare. Anybody do anything bad when they had a spree? He trembles to think someone might have observed him. He pushes the memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. This makes for more drinking. Was anybody in fear and tension sober? And then they would drink over that? Anybody remember the amount of fear you had before you came in here? Anybody have a lot of fear? Fear and tension just means that you're disturbed, you're discontented. And then they talk about psychologists, how we spend thousands of dollars for examinations, and we seldom tell people the whole truth. And it says we don't follow their advice, but I wrote, did I have the power to do it? See, I've seen a lot of people in the hospital, and they're alcoholics, and they're dying, and the doctors will say, you need to quit. And he says, absolutely, I'm going to quit. And then he's back 2 weeks later. Well, it's not because he's a bad person. It's because he didn't have any power to follow through on his decisions. Alcoholics who continue to drink are not, they're not bad. They have no power to do differently. And we're the same way, and we should all be grateful today that we have some power in our lives that we're not drinking today, at least so far. It says, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder many in the medical profession have low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. It says we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live longer happily in this world. Now remember, we have to admit to ourselves, then to God, and to another person. So we have to include God in here. But when we're talking to another person, remember God's with us. And so it's an important act of humility, this discussion with another person. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose. Now, this was written in 1939. There was no AA. And they thought you would get this book in the mail and you would do the steps. So they suggested a religious denomination has confession. Most of them want to go to a properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. But remember, this isn't really confession. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained. We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. And I wrote, my problem wasn't the fact of what I did, it's the fact that I was separated from God. And of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. And then I'm going to read this next paragraph. It has the golden rule of AA in it. If we cannot or would not rather do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed mouth, understanding friend. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. It may be one of your own family. Probably not a good idea. But we cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents, which will hurt them and make them unhappy. It says we have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. Isn't that what they talk about in steps 8 and 9, remember? Can't do any more harm to others. Such parts of our story we tell to someone who will understand yet be unaffected. So it's someone who's not involved. And I wrote, our spiritual malady, we're not bad people. We had wrong motives and wrong direction. And here's the AA golden rule. The rule is, I must be hard on myself, but always considerate of others. What do you think of that? It's a good way to live. Tough on myself, but considerate of others. Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, and maybe one is so situated there's no suitable person available. If so, the step may be postponed only if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity. And it says we're anxious to talk to the right person. It says he must be able to keep a confidence that he fully understands and approves what we are driving at, that he will not try to change our plan, but we must not use this as an excuse to postpone. When we decide is to hear a story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. We want to be free of the bondage of self, right? We want to remove the obstacles in our past, and we have to do this because if we keep hold of any of these things, we can't have God work in our lives. And they use the example of our mind is like at a 7-Eleven when we come in here. And when you walk into the store, they have all this stuff in the aisles. And that's our resentments. And then they have all these refrigerated cases. That's our fears. And then in the office is our shame and guilt. And if our mind is like that, God can't enter in and direct our lives. So we want to be able to let go of as much of that as is possible at the time so that God can begin to direct our lives. It says we're engaged upon a life and death errand. Do you think they mean that seriously? Yes. They threaten their lives and we agnostic. It says alcoholic death or living a spiritual life. There are only two choices. We pocket our pride and go to it. So this is the beginning of humility, and humility, the submission to God, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now here are the fifth step promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. One, we can look the world in the eye. Two, and remember, this is how you lose fear of people, because you've forgiven them and you're willing to make amends. Three, we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Four, our fears fall from us. Five, we begin to fear the nearness of our Creator. We may have had spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Six, the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Seven, and then here's the great line. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Is that, that's where we want to be, right? Now, we'll end with page 55. And page 55, in We Agnostics, it talks about, in the second paragraph, that we were, we had the fundamental idea of God in all of us. Anybody agree with that? We obscure it by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but it's there. And then we can see its demonstration in human lives. In the next paragraph, we saw that faith in some kind was part of our makeup, right? As much as feeling we have for a friend. And when we search fearlessly, which is what we've done in step 4 and 5, we find God. He's there deep inside of us. He's a fact as much as we are. We have found the great reality deep down within us. And in the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. So when you're done your fourth and fifth step, you begin to find the reality of your Creator inside of you. And then it says, if we can only clear the ground a bit, if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, which is prejudgment, enables you to think honestly, encourage you to search diligently within yourself, then, and you've done the searching diligently in your fourth and fifth step, then you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail the consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. And that's what happens when you've done your fifth step. The consciousness of your belief comes to you. You have a relationship with God, and you can begin to trust God and have true faith. So we'll stop there.